Like me for another week. This is show number, I think, number 42. I can't keep up anymore. We've done so many I've lost. I can't keep up with how many we've done. Anyway, I think this is 42, but we're visiting with a gentleman named Kenneth Reed this afternoon. Kenneth, how are you, sir?
I'm just fine.
Glad to have you with us. So what part of the country are you located?
I'm in Connecticut. I'm in east, near Hartford, Connecticut.
Hartford, Connecticut. So cold in the winter, and not too pleasant in the summer either, right?
I've been in the worst. I've been in colder places like Illinois and so Wisconsin. So you know, we didn't have any really cold days. We didn't have any below zero days this winter.
So, but then I guess in Chicago they had a lot of them, didn't they? Yeah.
Probably they did.
Yeah. Probably they did.
Now, it's not as far north as Maine, so, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, of course, us in Texas, it got down to below freezing a couple nights here, I think I remember. If I can remember that. Of course, in the summertime, we'll have 110 degrees in the shade. It'll be that. You're retired now?
Yeah, I'm retired.
Basically decided to retire. Well, so I guess you're retirement age, 60.
I'm about 61.
61, so we're not far apart. I'm 63. And what is your level of vision now?
Total blindness.
Has it always been this way?
Yeah, I've always been totally blind.
Always been totally blind. So you've been fighting it as long as I have. Where were you? Where did you start life? Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Middletown, Ohio. Everybody moved to Connecticut when I was about 2 years old.
Say everybody by all your family?
All my family, yeah.
Decided to move to Connecticut when you were 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
For what reason, do you know?
Well, work. My father worked at Amco Steel and in Middletown. He got a better job at Pratt & Whitney, which did, you know, the jet engines and stuff. So he worked at Pratt & Whitney all the time I knew him.
So he moved because of for work reasons, but you don't remember anything about it.
I was born in 43, see, so.
Yeah. So
what was going on then?
Oh, yeah. The war had just started in 42, so you don't remember any of that moving.
No.
You don't remember living in Middletown, Ohio, and moving.
No, nothing about Middletown.
And so your parents, do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I had a pretty big family. I had three brothers and two more sisters.
Yeah. Where were you?
I'm the end of the line. I'm the last one.
You're the baby?
Yeah.
Well, that's funny. So am I. They always kind of badmouth us. They always badmouth the kids, the baby kids. They always say we were spoiled and all this. I don't remember any of that.
I remember having not to get spoiled. My mother was very, how can I put it, She was afraid I'd get hurt, you know, doing this and doing that and doing this.
Now, is that right? She was afraid that you being, not having any eyesight, that you'd get hurt. Now,
yeah.
You all lived in the city and in a... Yeah,
no, it was actually kind of rural. It was a project. They call it a project. It was kind of rural, you know.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't that much traffic. I could walk all over this anywhere I wanted to in the daytime without having to worry about getting hit by a car.
But they worried about that. Your parents did.
Yeah.
That would be natural that they would. So
I had a bicycle out in the middle of the street, not having to worry about a thing.
Yeah, and you could hear so much better then. So you could hear parked cars on the sides, or you could hear cars coming a lot better. Then I sure got around a lot better. My echo system is
yeah.
fading. Is not. Now I've got to make a lot of noise now to keep from running into the house or keep
mm-hmm.
from running out and make a lot more noise. And I've tried hearing aids and they don't help. But anyway, so when they decided to send you to school, where they sent you to Connecticut School for the Blind or what?
Yeah, it was called Oak Hill School later on, but when I got there, it was called Connecticut School for the Blind.
Uh-huh.
And I got there about five or six, something like that.
Well, of course,
my birthday's in April, too, so I got there late.
So you were six probably when you.
Yeah.
Well, you figure Connecticut's not too big, so it couldn't have been too far to school.
No, I across the bridge actually, because the school's in Hartford. I live in East Hartford.
And so it was just across the bridge.
It was just across the bridge. Yeah.
Did you get to come home every day?
The weekends, just on the weekends.
Wait, so you're a weekend student?
Yeah.
So you knew your family, and you also knew the kids at the School for the Blind. But you every weekend you were liberated from that institute.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it was.
Is liberated. But then you missed all the little dances that they had and the activities that they had on weekends. But your weekends were a whole lot better than ours. They had to stay there. I remember weekends that just stretched out and we had nothing to do. I guess that's why we all fell in love with radio, because all we had to do was listen to the radios.
Yeah, our school didn't have anything going on the weekends. Everybody was home.
I guess as small as Connecticut is, they would be. Everybody would be home on weekends, wouldn't they?
They took them to the train station and took them home.
Back then, well, I guess up northeast, trains are still a viable means of transportation, even today, aren't they?
Yeah,
back then.
I believe in trains. I mean, it's really getting silly with these big. They got these big trucks that are double, you know, double length trucks.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff, sometimes triple length. They shouldn't be on the road. They should be using trains.
Yeah, I'm sorry that we abandoned trains and we decided not to use them as our means of. Of course, up north, northeast, they still use them. You can do a lot of riding up there. We noticed.
Yeah,
we were up there last, but in Texas there aren't but about two passenger trains that go through the state every day, and that's about it.
Right.
Anyway, so they sent you to the blind school, started teaching you Braille. How'd you do there with her?
Well, you know, that was I always had a hard time with Braille. For some reason, I would get E's and I's mixed up, and not D's and F's, but E's and I's are my biggest problem.
Yeah,
I must be dyslexic or something. I don't know what it is, but. I never was a very fast Braille reader. I did most of. I was better at, you know, tapes and reading talking books and doing things orally.
Yeah. So you didn't read library books in Braille. You had them read to you. Yeah.
Or I'd find a way to read them some other way if I could find one.
Have somebody read them to you, or yeah. Well, you know, that's really interesting. Every week we end up talking about Braille, and of course Braille is a big part of lots of blind people's lives. But I'm like you. I couldn't, and I'm sure you've heard this on shows before. You and I are the only two people in the world that couldn't didn't like the rest of them seem to just take to it. You know,
I didn't take to it well at all.
Yeah, I talked to a lady this morning that did all her college, most of her college work in Braille, and she said she was an avid reader, and that's how she read was Braille. So that made school hard for you if you didn't do Braille
very
well.
Hard. Very hard.
That makes school difficult if you don't.
The only thing that saved me was music. That was the only thing that saved me.
It was music?
Yeah, music.
And so, that's right, I forgot you said you were a jazz musician. You are a jazz musician.
Yeah,
so you started taking music at an early age, or taking what, piano or what?
Piano at six, first grade, let me take piano.
First grade?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. I think it was fourth or fifth before they let us. And you took to that. So that was your saving grace, is getting through school.
Yeah.
Did you ever make a living doing that?
I never made a total living at music, but it helped out quite a bit. I remember during the time when I was trying to get into college, and I had to wait for Social Security to kick in. I had to support myself with music.
Yeah.
A couple of. So it helped. I never depended on it to make a living off of.
You never had to support a family with the music playing.
No.
Well, you're a lucky man. I'll tell you that. I've done it. It was tough. It was either that or sell brooms, and I took the music, of course. And you made it through completely through school at this school for the blind or what?
Well, no, I dropped out of that school. I made it to high school through like second year of high school.
10th grade.
In 10th grade, and because of all the braille problems and everything, I left that school. My parents wanted to go to Massachusetts anyway, so that made it so I had to go to Perkins School for the Blind.
So you transferred to the Perkins Institute for the Blind.
Yeah.
They don't call it institute anymore. I think it's Perkins School for the Blind.
It was a real institution too, I tell you.
Was it? What do you mean by that?
I didn't know how confined I was till I got to Perkins. Perkins is very confining.
Because you didn't get to go home on weekends, or what?
Well, the weekends, upstreet stuff, the way the Perkins is kind of cliquish. If you're not in a clique, you know, it's kind of hard to get along at Perkins.
So, but this was in high school, and you didn't know any of these kids, so you weren't a clique.
No, I didn't know a single person at Perkins.
How did they feel like that would be better for you? I mean, what did they think? Because they teach Braille at Perkins also.
It wasn't their decision. It was my mother's, my parents wanted to go to Massachusetts because my father was a minister, and he had a church there, and he had retired from Pratt & Whitney then. And so there was no reason for him to really stay in Hartford or East Hartford anymore. So he decided to go to Springfield, Mass.
So they moved to Springfield, Mass.
Yeah.
And put you in Perkins Institute.
Right. Even though I tried to get him to let me stay with my brother in Hartford, they said, no, you got to come with us.
You got to come with us. Little blind boy, you do what we tell you to do.
Yeah.
So you were at Perkins, and of course you had Braille there too. So did you do any better, or what did you?
No, I didn't do any better. I dropped out of Perkins too.
You dropped out of Perkins, too?
Dropped out of Perkins, too.
Because all the Braille reading?
Mainly that, I guess that was it, mainly. And plus the fact, you know, I mean, it was a hard time for being a teenager in those days, you know, at least.
Yeah.
For me, I had a hard time. And besides that, you know, the other thing is, I was the only black kid in, there was only three or four of us, the only African Americans in the school, and I guess I was kind of lonely about that too. So anyway.
So there were only, and this was when? What time of when was this? This was
60, 61. 60,
and so you were the only black kid. You and two or three others, or what?
Right. There was only about three of us, three or four of us out of the whole population of about 300, I think.
And so were you, would you say that you were discriminated against, or you were...
I can cite you places where I discriminated, not by the school, by the students.
By the students.
Yeah.
Kids can be awfully mean to each other, you know, they can be awfully hard on each other without even realizing it, or I guess they do realize it. But you dropped out of there, too. So where did you finish high school?
No, didn't finish high school.
You just didn't?
Just didn't finish.
Well, you know, our lives have paralleled in a lot of ways. I didn't finish either. In fact, they asked me not to come back. Went to the Texas School for the Blind. They said, Philip is not learning anything we want to teach him. I couldn't see myself being a piano tuner or a chair caner or a basket weaver.
No.
Or selling brooms door to door. I knew what I wanted to do, and that was radio. And I didn't figure they weren't teaching me any of that, so it was time for me to go. I told them I wasn't coming back, and so they sent a letter to my father saying, "Don't send him back." And of course, they didn't send me back. So you dropped out of Perkins, Mm-hmm. And let me guess, you got some manual job doing something.
I went to, I graduated from there to Goodwill, actually. I worked at Goodwill for I don't know, what was it, probably 2 years almost, until I got up enough gumption to say, look, I don't have to put up with this nonsense anymore.
I'm not putting up with this anymore. I'm leaving.
Right. And so I got found somebody at Goodwill to help me fill out a forms. And I knew there was a dark room. I didn't want to do that either, but I said, well, it's better than Goodwill. But it was a dark room down the street. So I filled out the forms to get into the dark room. And they said, come on. They accepted me. So
they accepted you. Now, this was developing film in the dark room.
Right.
Because
exactly.
They needed blind people to do that because the room needed to be dark. And you
right.
were as good there as anybody. I tell you what, let's take a short break and come back in just a minute, and we'll continue with and talk about your adult life, all right? Hang on just a minute. More Blind Like Me. Be right back.
Blind Sites. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's Blind Site, here's Don Shaw.
Hi there. I want to talk to you today a little bit about a former guest that we had on the Blind Handyman Show named William Miller. William is a woodworking person. Told us on the show about making products, building products for an rehabilitation agency, and about selling some different products that he's built over the past years. And William, being an ambitious type person, has got a website now that he's selling woodworking products on this site in kit form. And if you've ever thought about buying and putting together a kit, which can be great, you might want to go and visit William's site. He's got some really great kits on the site, everything from bird feeder kits, bird feeders on stands, to mantle clock kits with the clock inserts, to paper towel holders, CD cases for you music collectors, even got wind chime kits. And that's the one I'm going to give William a call here in the next day or so in order. I like these wind chimes. They're the big wind chimes with the, I think the pipes are from 22 to 26 inches long. I think you have your choice of either half inch or 3/4 inch round pipes on these wind chimes. They're really nice, big, bassy sounding wind chime kit. And these kits would be excellent either for yourself, of course, for birthday, Christmas gifts, even to buy and resell. You know, put the kit together and resell it and make you a dollar also. Or who knows? Endless possibilities. Anyway, you have your choice of wood in these kits, everything from poplar wood to hardwood. Give William a call. I'm sure he'd be happy to talk to you about the kit, what type of wood you want to be used in this kit. It's nice to have the choice anyway, the option of the type of wood that you want to be used in the kit that you buy. Call him up. I'm sure he'd be glad to cut you one out and ship it your way. And besides all that, he really has some really great prices on these kits. And being a blind person, if you don't have anyone handy to read you the instructions for the kit, he sends a cassette tutorial with each kit that would give you, of course, the instructions on assembling the kit. I'm sure if you had any questions also, you could give William a call. Anyway, a great website, great prices, and a good screen reader friendliness rating of a 10. Go and check it out, www.gamerspage.com/THEZARA/WSM.HTM. Go and take a look at WSM Woodworking. I think you'll be glad you did. Until next time, I'm Don Shaw. Keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sites.
We're visiting with Kenneth Reed. Kenneth is in Connecticut and worked for NASA for several years, but at this time of life, you'd never know he was going to be successful at anything. You were in that dark room and you were 19, 20 years old and just basically bumming around as a kid, right?
Well, yeah, sort of.
Yeah, just, and
so I got alive. Well, I went to work every day, came home, and by this time I had gotten married.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'd gotten married.
Married a sighted girl?
Yeah.
Is that right? And
so I had, and my.
You think that you would have gone to one of those to some club and gotten you a job playing music? Huh?
Well, you know, I did play in this place called Zingsy's in Springfield, but like I said, it wasn't. I only played on Sundays, and it wasn't solid. And the union up here is kind of discriminatory also, you know, unless you and of course, you know, only people I support are classical musicians, you know, the union only supports classical musicians, they don't support jazz musicians at all.
Uh-huh, but you were working in this dark room the night shift probably?
No, I was working daytime.
Working daytime?
Yeah.
And playing a little music on Sundays? And
yeah.
You thought, or did you think this is going to be it? This is my lot in life for the rest of it?
I figured that was going to be it because, you know, I would talk to the council areas and blah, 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 and they'd say, well, you know, you have to go back to school. It'll take you years to get your GED, blah, 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 you know. They discouraged me any way they could. So I said, well, you know, I just stick in the dark room and finally, I said, I've had enough of this. I was ready for a divorce, too.
Now what? I missed that one.
I was ready for a divorce, too.
Ready for a divorce and ready to quit this dark room.
Ready to quit this dark room.
This stuff. And okay, how old do you remember what age you were here?
I must have been about 20, 24, 25, something like
that. So it was time for a change. It was time to start thinking about the future. But you still didn't have high school diploma.
No, still didn't have a diploma yet.
Oh, okay. And as you said, the counselors were discouraging you all they could.
Right.
Yeah, I love it. You're right, they were. And so to carry us on from there.
Okay, so what happened then is I left Standard Photo, and then my sister, who lived in Washington, D.C., said, why don't you come here and stay with me till you find out what you want to do and get stuff together, you know. And so I left Hartford, and left Springfield and stayed with her in Washington, D.C. And I just decided that I was either going to get somewhere with music or go to school. I had to definitely decided that it was going to be one of those two things.
You were either going to get somewhere with music. Now, by that you meant what?
Get a regular job or get with a group or something like that with music.
Or you were going to go to school.
Or go back to school.
So you'd made some decisions in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so obviously the school thing worked out, the music didn't.
Well, they both. I did. I wound up doing both.
Okay.
I wound up getting into a program to get my GED.
Uh-huh.
I got that done.
And it wasn't nearly as hard as they said it was going to be.
No, it wasn't nearly as hard.
There was nothing to it. In fact, you were probably one of the bright ones in the class getting your GED. I've been there.
Yeah.
And it's not nearly the big bugaboo everybody thinks it is.
No.
All right, so you got your GED.
You got my GED, and then let's see. I still, you know, I made a few friends and got a few gigs and played around town a little bit. Not any big things, but you know, small things.
Mm-hmm.
So then, let's see. Where are we now? Okay.
We've got you out of the dark room. You're living with your sister in Washington.
Right.
You're going to make it in music, or you're going to go back to school. So you played a little bit, and what happened?
So I got my GED, and I still didn't have a job, of course, yet. So I was walking around DuPont Circle, and I met this guy who seemed to have a Massachusetts accent. So I started talking to him. I said, where is he from? He said he was from Fall River. And he worked at the Labor Department, and he knew about a program that I could get into that would get me a job. So even though I was a clerk typist and I can't spell, but I'm not a good speller in the world.
So he got you a job as a clerk typist?
He got me a job as a clerk typist. Actually, what I wound up being was an office gopher, and I would take notes on meetings that they had. And be a fair witness. Like, if he's meeting with a contractor, I could go over the meeting and what the contractor said he was going to do, and just do so that there'd be somebody there that so the contractor couldn't come back and say, "Well, I didn't say that." And then I was yes, you did. You said so and so. So I wrote it down. Here it is.
So how did you write it in Braille or type it, or how did you?
I could write it in Braille. Yeah.
You do enough Braille to do that.
Yeah, I was doing that and making notes on conferences that they'd had and stuff like that.
Well, this job, that sounds like a fairly decent job. Did you think this is going to be it from now on, or what?
No, that wasn't going to be it because I really had a love for electronics, and
uh-huh.
I discovered that when I was a kid, so I stuck my hand inside a radio and put my finger on the cap of a tube and noticed that, it would hum when you touch the cap of the tube
mm-hmm.
at the time, or create feedback, one of the two.
Yeah, but usually tap on it, make it microphonic tube.
Or, right,
you know.
Yeah.
And
so
that...
I said, well, I tried for a short time going to technical school. And I figured I could be a technician.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't going to work because stuff. Even though I could tell you what's wrong with something, I couldn't replace anything that I took out.
You couldn't solder.
I couldn't solder. But well, the stuff is so close in there together, and it's really hard to solder.
Yeah.
And they don't even solder it anyway. They wave solder this stuff. So when somebody has to do it by hand, it's doubly hard, especially when you don't know exactly where it needs to go.
Yeah, especially when you can't see. that would be a definite. I hate to use the word handicap, but inconvenience. When you
right.
say, yeah.
So anyway, back to Labor Department.
Okay.
I stayed there for 3.5 years, and they moved into the building, and I decided that I was going to, we had a federation.
A blind federation?
Yeah, we had a federation of the blind in our community. And they were kind of encouraging me that I could probably get into college.
Mm-hmm.
And that looked reasonable to me because as a technician, that wasn't going to be what I wanted to do. So I went with them, and it was kind of a long fight. But there were some people at Catholic University already who had been there. And I did meet with the dean of engineering, and he was kind of interested in me going too because, he's a great salesman type,
Mm-hmm.
So,
but had there been other blind people? Now, which university was this?
Catholic University of America.
And had there been blind people there before?
But they were in other. They were like in a lot of. There was some blind lawyers who graduated.
Okay.
Yeah, but no, there was nobody in engineering.
Nobody in engineering. You were first.
Yeah.
But he was trying to get you to go because the government would pay for it, or because why? What was?
Oh, he never told me the reason.
Yeah.
I suppose, I don't know. He never told me the reason, but I suppose that could have been the reason.
Yeah. Well, and so you went.
So anyway, they waived a few things like Kyle Gingrich, blah, 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 and I went. They put me on probation for the first couple of semesters. We got through that.
Put you on probation because you couldn't see and they weren't sure you could do it.
Right.
Okay.
I had to take some out-of-the-way courses, like an out-of-the-way calculus course and things like that, that the other kids, the other people wouldn't have to take.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to take them all over again later on.
Why did you have to take these that other kids didn't have to take? Because you didn't have any preparatory college stuff at all?
Yes, that was the main thing, yeah.
But you survived them, and you did those by getting someone to read to you, or how did you?
I had readers. I had recording for the blind, and between those things, they helped.
Yeah, but they were up and running by then, right?
Yeah.
So this was late 60s.
Yeah, this was actually 70. I got to D.C. in 70, and then 73 I entered school.
So yeah, things were starting to look better for blind people then.
Yeah, except for computers. We didn't have talking computers yet.
We didn't have, and it took us a long time to get those, and thank heavens we do now. So you made it through 4 years was this a 4-year degree or what?
No, it took 7 years to get it because, most engineers, even sighted people, it takes 6 years to get through it. There's so many math courses you have to take.
Well, we did an interview with a guy out in California who went to college 11 years, so don't feel too bad. he also ended up working for NASA. At the SETI Institute, he said he took him 11 years.
Oh, was that Kent Cully?
Yeah. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I got to meet. Well, Kent Cully, we got him to come to NASA Goddard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He came to Goddard Space Center
And he was one of the most popular speakers that our group had ever had. We have a advisory committee on the handicapped at Goddard.
Yeah.
And we have a thing that we do every October, and he was one of them. He was one of the most popular speakers that had ever, come. So that was a good turnout.
He's a wonderfully bright, engaging individual. From what I was able to gather, that's amazing. I guess working for NASA, you would know him. The first lady I did, and I'll never think of this girl's name. The first interview we did on this Blind Like Me show was a girl that works at Goddard Space Center. I will never think of this kid's name in a million
Kathy
years.
Williams?
No, seemed like her last name was... I think her last
Smith?
Name... Huh?
Was it Smith?
Yes.
Okay, I know her too. She just got there.
She just got there. She hadn't been there long.
No.
But she'll be there a while. She's a really... Is it Terry? I cannot remember this kid's name. And I corresponded with her several times.
Courtney.
Really, Courtney Smith, very bright girl, taking flying lessons. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's taking flying lessons. She can't see any better than you and I can. Why not? Why not? Because, I don't know how far she'll get, but they land a lot of planes nobody can see anyway.
Well, there was a General Doolittle who flew through the fog on instrumentation just to prove it could be done without looking out the window.
Yeah, but then he knew at any time he wanted to, he could.
He could look out the window.
And that'd be a lot of difference. This girl, Courtney, she can't look out any window. She can't see any better than you and I can. I just loved her to death. She's taking flying lessons. Anyway, back to your college, and so it took 7 years, but you ended up with a degree in electrical engineering.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right.
BEE, Bachelor of Electrical Engineering. And I was glad that was over.
Well, I imagine so. I would imagine that you were. It took you a good while to get it. You were getting long in the tooth. You were 30-something years old.
Yeah.
It was time for you to. But your first marriage resulted in children or no children, or what happened there? You divorced that lady?
I had a son in my first marriage, but he didn't live. He lived to be 19 years old.
Really?
Yeah. It turns out that his mother had a condition called Marfan's disease,
uh-huh.
and it's a like a connective tissue type disease of the cartilage, so it affects your heart.
And he only lived to be 19.
Mm-hmm.
But you were at this time you went to college. You were single again.
Well, not exactly.
Not exactly.
I had a significant other.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Everyone needs one. We all need one. Don't you think?
Yeah.
All right. So we got through college, and what does a guy do, a blind fella do with a degree in electrical engineering if he can't see? Who's going to hire him?
That was it. Well, I had offers from. I went to DEC to interview them, and I found that later the DEC said, "Well, let somebody else hire him. We don't want to spend the money on his equipment."
Now, what place was this that said that?
A digital equipment.
Digital Equipment Corporation?
Yeah.
Yeah, they make Dektop, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
They do. They make Dektop, but they make a lot of other things. So they said, we don't want to spend the time and equipment to hire him. Let somebody else hire him.
Right.
All right.
So then I got bites, you know, different opportunities from NOAA, the FBI, other people who won't tell me who they are. I assume the NSA. There's a whole bunch of us at NSA.
The people they wouldn't tell you who they were.
Right. They just give you a standard form. They don't tell you where it's going, you know.
Really? And is this general with people that have a degree in electrical engineering? I mean, is that pretty standard?
I would say so, yeah.
Everybody gets those. You know, it's kind of blind things where they, and in your case, double blind, where you don't know where it's going and you don't, you know.
It's sent to you from an address. You don't know what that is. It doesn't have any labels on it. You know, you really can't tell what you're filling out the form for.
So you can't prejudge as to whether you'd like to live there or whether you'd like to work for these people. All you do is fill out the form, and if they like you, they come back.
If they like you, they come and
yeah.
ask you to take a lie detector test and so on and so forth.
So you're early 30s now, and you're casting about for a job, still living with your sister in Washington?
No, I'm on my own now.
You're on your own now.
I'm on my own, and my significant other, Kathy. Her name is Kathy.
Playing a little music?
Playing
a little music or not?
Yeah, I was playing a little music. I was playing in quite a few clubs in D.C. by then.
Yeah. All right. And so how did you get, I guess, was your first and only job NASA, or did you?
That was my first and only job, yeah. I outside the Labor Department. And then I got to NASA after getting through school.
After you got your degree, NASA hired you.
Yeah, they hired me.
Hmm. All right, we want to talk about that, but let's take our second little short break and be back with more Blind Like Me in just a second.
Facts. About blind folks. Information you probably never need. Titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Mark Christie.
The National Sports Center for the Disabled was founded in January 1970 when Winter Park Resort's ski school director agreed to teach skiing to a group of children with amputations from the Children's Hospital of Denver. 3 decades later, the center is widely considered the largest and most successful outdoor therapeutic recreation agency in the world. Each year, thousands of children and adults with disabilities take to the ski slopes, mountain trails, and golf links to learn more about sports and themselves. With specifically trained instructors and its own adaptive laboratory equipment, the center can accommodate children and adults with almost any physical or developmental disability, including blindness, paraplegia, amputation, stroke, cancer, cerebral palsy, hearing impairment, and spina bifida. The NSCD is known internationally as the best program of its kind. On the Blind Side, I'm Mark Christie.
On the Blind Side, celebrating the contribution of blind people to societal evolution.
With our last little segment, Blind Like Me, Kenneth Reed is our guest. He's in Connecticut, worked for NASA for 20 years, jazz musician, had some problems in school, They didn't much like him, and he didn't like them either, and didn't do well with Braille and had a hard time, but ended up with a degree in electrical engineering at age 17. No one, if someone had said that was going to happen, a lot of folks would have bet against it, because you were had quit school, working at Goodwill, just figured your future held very little, but you ended up with a degree in electrical engineering and a good job at NASA, and you're now retired from there.
Right.
And how did you end up at NASA? Tell us that story.
Well, just through the filling out all forms for everybody, and I remember at the time I had to go through to the Library of Congress to look up all the material for the 171 forms and different government forms you have. Because they'll check every nook and cranny. You know, I don't know how these people got. You heard about these guys who found out they had diplomas from diploma mills.
Yeah.
I don't know how that ever happened, because it couldn't happen with me. They checked everything.
They checked everything.
Yeah. So finally, I did get an interview at NASA, and the guy who was interviewing me was the one who I was hoping I'd work for, because he was working in a spare time on speech independent recognizing machines.
Now, let me ask, just back up just a second. Did they, in any of these forms, did you have to tell them that you couldn't see? When you went to this interview, did this guy know you couldn't see?
Oh yeah, because I went there with a cane.
When you walked in, he knew that. But before you got there, did he know it? Before you got there, did he know you couldn't see?
I think he might have. I think he might have. Yeah.
And he was working on independent speech recognition, as in talk and type, as in those kind of things.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this was, late 70s.
This was late 70s.
Yeah, that's pretty advanced for, when you think about it, for that time. I didn't think anybody was working on anything like that back then. So, and he liked you, talked with you, and subsequently hired you.
Uh-huh.
And hired you to do what?
Well, that's just it. He hired me, or he recommended that I be hired, but I didn't get to work with him for about another year and a half, almost 2 years.
Because?
So meantime, all I did was, I was working with some people down the hall doing some programming work. And I'm not a programmer, but
mm-hmm.
I hate to get pushed into things that I was not really trained for, but I was programming. And so that's what I was doing, programming. I was writing programs for some... It's such a long time ago. I can't remember exactly what it was.
But we had, they had started to use computers back then, and so you were writing programs for something.
Yeah.
But you couldn't read the program you wrote, because you had no speech.
Well, that's something that they hooked up for me, finally. They hooked up a speech, a terminal for me. It was like a talking terminal. And some guys at the Navy, at NIH, showed us how to do one. So NASA did their own. So they had a talking terminal for me about a few months after I got there.
They had your terminal had speech.
Yes.
And actually speech that you could understand, because I remember those first.
They used the Radio Shack. Synthesizer.
Really? A Radio Shack speech synthesizer?
Uh-huh.
I never knew Radio Shack made one.
Well, they did, and it was based on that same one that's in your Braille speech.
Yeah, which is understandable if you've worked with it a while.
Right.
Because it's compared to DeckTalk, it's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's usable. I know people that, you know, I got a friend in Dallas that just swears by it. They read books with it.
Yeah.
But it drives me nuts. I can't understand it.
Oh, it's very tiring.
But you could learn to understand it.
Yeah. Learn to understand it. And you know, the Vax, I was using the Vax program on and stuff like that, and it had a good editor, was easy to program with.
Mm-hmm.
So I was writing programs they're using for image mapping and, you know, doing things with the cameras and stuff.
And they finally within a year or so you were they moved you to working with this fellow that you wanted to work with to begin with.
Yeah, because my first boss, he didn't know what to do with me. I mean,
yeah.
he was just off, you know, he didn't know what he was doing. So finally, when Don got there, who was the guy that interviewed me, things started to really happen a lot faster now.
This first guy didn't know what to do with you.
No.
It's amazing. That's our government in action, friends. That's the way it works. But when Don, this guy that you wanted to work for, got there, mm-hmm. He took you under his wing, and you all began working on speech recognition things.
Well, no, we began. Well, that was in his spare time, but we began working on. There's a program that I learned to use called SPICE, which is a circuit simulation program. What it is it's a way to simulate a circuit through software and find out exactly how it's going to behave.
Okay.
And so I was designing things with that program, amplifiers and even digital circuits, everything.
With the SPICE program?
Huh? Yeah, with SPICE.
With the SPICE program. And you were able to do this with your limited speech terminal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, this is amazing to me, because this was early 80s, had to be.
This was 80, 81.
And you know, blind people could have had talking computers back then, but nobody did, except you.
I suppose that's true.
Well, it is true.
I had talking apples.
Do what now? You had an apple
had
to talk?
Apples that were talking.
A little 3E, I mean a 2E, Apple 2E?
Yeah, the Apple 2E.
Whatever it was, we had one of those, but it didn't talk. But I didn't know you could make it talk.
Yeah, we had a card for them too.
I didn't know about the Radio Shack. Radio Shack synthesizer. Just quickly, and I don't want to dwell on this, but I guess being black and blind created some problems in and of itself, right?
Yeah, it does create problems. it sure does.
Because you know that being blind creates problems.
Right.
And at one time, maybe not so much anymore, but at one time being black created problems. So if you combine the two, it would make life a little harder for an old boy, wouldn't it, huh?
Yeah.
Make things, I guess, in some ways a little more difficult. However, being blind in and of itself is difficult enough when you think about it. So you spent 20 years working with the same guy at NASA, or what?
Not exactly. You know, so during the time I worked with him, we did all this stuff with SPICE, and we made these amplifiers.
Uh-huh.
And then the biggest thing I did with him, I guess, was the thermal pill.
The what?
They call it the thermal ingestible pill. And it's a
wow.
pill that you swallow, and it transmits your temperature out as it courses through your intestines. And the way we didn't design the pill exactly, but we did design the receiver for the pill. And John Hopkins actually got the contract to do the fabrication of this pill.
And this pill has a little transmitter in it.
Yeah, it has a little transmitter that has a crystal. The key to it is the crystal that's in the pill that determines the frequency.
It's yeah.
a temperature-sensitive crystal. And so all you have to do is like frequency count and get the guy's temperature.
And so you'd have your frequency counter there, and you'd be counting.
You have a little antenna wrapped around the. It's like in a belt near like his belly button.
Yeah.
And then you read that frequency out, and that tells you what the temperature was.
What the guy's temperature is. because the crystal controlling the thing is temperature sensitive.
Right.
That's the wildest thing I ever heard of. Are they still? Is that still being used?
They still make them. Now there's one that has a camera in it.
That would look at your intestines.
Right. It's got a camera in it.
Wow. So you mean no one will ever have to have a colonoscopy again?
No, it doesn't do that.
It doesn't do that?
No.
Well, I was hoping it did. I've had one. I was hoping it did. So no one would ever have to. Yeah, well, you were involved in the design of this, or you were...
Yeah, I was involved in the design of that.
That's quite a thing. How long have we had this? I mean, I didn't know this existed.
About 85 or so, since 85.
Is that right? And the little thing just passes through you.
Right.
And it doesn't dissolve? It doesn't...
No, it doesn't dissolve. It's about the size of a 1,000 milligram pill. Like a big vitamin E pill.
And it simply passes through you, and it's gone.
And it's
never
gone.
To be heard from again.
Now it is, yeah. They used to retrieve them and, like, take the coating off of it and then reuse it. But
you're kidding.
Now they're gone.
They used to reuse them?
Right. They had a silicon rubber coating on it, and they could etch. They could take the coating off by a sterilizer.
And put a new coating on and reuse it.
Because we had it so that, you know how these shavers work? You put the shaver on this charger.
Uh-huh.
It charges magnetically.
Yeah.
Right. That's the way we powered the pill.
That's the way the pill was charged.
Right.
So it had a little electrical energy, a little electrical.
It had a battery in it, yeah.
Had a little battery in it, and you would take the rubber coating off. They would recharge the pill, put a new rubber coating on, and someone else would swallow that pill.
Right.
Listen to me. You didn't tell the guy, the second guy. You never told the second guy.
No, you never told the second guy.
That's the wildest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's crazy stuff, you know? You didn't bother mentioning to the second guy that this had already, you know, it wouldn't hurt anything. I mean, you know, it'd be clean. Everything would be fine. We know that.
Yeah, we have. They sterilize ultraviolet light. Everything would be fine.
I don't know that I'd anyway, now they just get rid of them.
Right. They just dump them, yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. So that if I'm ever asked to take one of those, I'll know that no one else. All right, what else at NASA did you work on?
So then after he left and that project closed down, then I worked with CCDs.
Work with what now?
Charge couple device cameras.
Uh-huh.
And we made some of the, I designed some of the first drive circuits for that. For the application we were using it for. We had really, it's not, you know, the general CCU that you see is like in a camera or a digital camera.
Yeah.
They're a lot simpler to use than the ones we had. So I designed a driver for these and also a way to program it so you could program it. Whatever. It's like all of our arrays are not going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to make it programmable. So
well, yeah.
I designed a way to do that.
And you designed that in conjunction with other people, or did
yeah,
you?
I just use a computer to put the circuit on and everything.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically it was like I tell her what to do and she does it. You know, I tell her we need a gate here, we need an OR gate there, we need a NAND gate there. You know. And I could sort of see from the knowing about the pins, knowing about how the chip is supposed to behave, I could just sort of walk through it and see it in my head, what we need to make a certain logical function happen.
That's amazing. And so you'd tell this sighted person how to do it. You couldn't do it, but you could tell her how to do it.
Yeah, I couldn't run her particular software at that time, but
yeah.
I found out there was some software that I could run, but it just takes a long time to do it. A sighted person can do it so much faster.
So much faster, sure. Are you, I guess, you still kept, have you kept up with computers? Are you still through with them?
Oh, yeah, I still fool with them. I have one, my main computer is a put-together computer, and it does all the heavy lifting around here.
Uh-huh.
I'm into sound, and it's a total recorder, and sound forge, those kinds of things.
Play with that sound forge.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't bought it yet, but I need to. I'm still working with a hard drive machine I bought that's got a hard drive in it that acts like a tape recorder. So it does it all digital, but it's not. It's a computer, but it's meant to. It's set up like a tape recorder, you know.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I have one of those too, but it's very visual. I can't use it.
Well, I just kind of memorize like moving, cutting, and pasting files. I just memorize those series of buttons that you do. And you're not going to lose it. You know, it's like a computer. You have to work hard to lose a file.
Oh, good.
I can go to cut, and I know, you know, then the choices are cut, copy, paste, undo, redo. And so you go to cut, and then you set a start and stop point, a start and end point, and then you select the track you want to copy or whatever you want to do with it. And mm-hmm. I can move files around. It doesn't always work, but if it doesn't, I just turn it off and come back to default and start over.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, well, you sound like you've had a good life, and you deserve to retire and stay home and play with your computers and
yeah.
Talk to your grandchildren if you have any. Nephews and nieces, is that it?
Yeah, nephews and nieces. And the other thing I've got to tell you about is your handyman show.
Yeah.
That's really cool because I had shop, you know, our school... The one good thing we had was a shop. We had shop every day after, like, the like fourth or fifth grade.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm really glad that I know how to use tools and how to, you know.
Yeah. Did they let you use tools at the blind school?
Everything except electric saw. The Perkins, they let you use electric saw.
They let you use electric saw at the Perkins school.
At Perkins, yeah.
That's amazing. We had all kind of woodwork tools at our blind school. They wouldn't let us use any of them. They had wonderful tools, just, you know, a whole shop full of them, but we couldn't do anything. They'd let us sand a board and use a hand plane and a miter saw,
uh-huh.
but no electric saws. Now I've got all that stuff in my shop. They hold them. I own it all now, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Kenneth Reed, you've had a good life, and I've enjoyed visiting with you on the Blind Like Me. I don't know when we'll run this, but I'll give you a call and let you know.
Okay.
All right, sir. Thank you much.
We'll see you then.
Hold on.